Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
Welcome to the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name is George Cooper, and welcome to another show in front of a beautiful live audience here at the Half Moon Putney. On today's show, we'll look back at our inevitable draw against Crystal Palace. I'm joined by the one and only Lizzie Barnards, Mr. Dan Cook, and the lovely Dom Betts.
You sure you don't want to? I could have pre-recorded a voice note from yesterday about this game and we could have just got this out of the way.
Yeah, Dom was saying before that this was the most 1-1 game in the history of the Premier League.
I could smell the 1-1 walking up Stevenage Road.
Before we get into it, Dan, would you like to rattle through some 3-word reviews for us, please?
Yeah, let's do it. Right, so slightly tongue-in-cheek from Londinium calling, we've got Match of the Day curtain raiser. I think that goes down as... I think we know where this is going to be on the telly. A couple referencing Jeffrey Schlupp's ludicrous goal. But we've had from No Justice, No Peace, which is Rick Cardis with late Schlupp up, which I like. Daniel at FFC with Schluppy in possession because we were woeful in that first half. Our very own Farrell Monk, who's here somewhere, with glad that's over. And finally, Jakob Krupa with Half Mooney's hangover, which I love.
I mean, Dom, it had all the makings of a Premier League classic. You got Crystal Palace playing this free-flowing football, beheading kings across the Premier League. Fulham, we're free of the shackles of whether or not we're going to stay up. We, you know, we've got nothing to play for. Who are we kidding? We're last of the match of the day again, aren't we?
Mate, I was hoping it was going to be a bit like Leicester, you know, because the live Fulhamish was after the Leicester game last season. And I was like... Nah, it's just going to be 1-1, isn't it? Like, it was after that opening sort of 10, 15 minutes, I was like, well, do you want to give the ball away any more times? Like, it was like we couldn't get our own half. I think our only technical shot in before Leno had that obviously horrific injury. straight out of Eddie Howe playbook. But yeah, I was hoping it would just be two teams who know they're safe, going completely at it, and that just simply wasn't the case. And I just can't really understand what was the team talk before the game? like, what did you say? I'll just give Palace the ball every 5 seconds and hope they miss like 3 1-on-1s and we might be able to get something out of the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I too was hoping for this end-to-end swashbuckling break, but it just wasn't to be. And yeah, you mentioned the horrific injury that was sustained about Leno. Thank God that he's all right, you know. It was just so shameless from, obviously, when Newcastle came to visit us. It's actually very clever because, of course, if the keeper goes down injured, it means that they can't just nip off and get treatment. They have to stop the game. And we were just getting pelters after pelters after pelters from Crystal Palace, and then you just Leno just sort of collected it and then just thought, right, I'm going down.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Lizzie, it was pretty shameless stuff, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I saw us go over for a drinks break and I was like, oh, it's not that hot, and then Leno was on the ground and I was like, oh yeah, no, I see. Yeah, we picked up a little bit after that, thank goodness. Couldn't have got much worse, but still, I don't think the game got anywhere near too exciting.
I think the biggest sign of when it's absolutely not real is the second Leno goes down, all 10 outfield players race towards Marco Silva. Have we agreed on this then?
Yeah, yeah.
I've also never seen a bigger queue to go for a beer. like the amount of... Like, I wasn't even the first person to go down when he went down to go for a beer. It was like, everyone was like... it's half hour in, yeah. Must be about that time, but thank God he did do it, because it because before that, me and my mates were literally sat in H5 and be like, should be one up, should be two up, should be three up.
Crystal Palace,
yeah, and potentially four, but thank God he did do it, because something happened then, something happened at half time. But I said that first half, I don't think it can just go unnoticed because it was so bad.
Yeah, can I just ask Dom, how much of the game did you actually manage to watch?
Well, beer at 28 minutes and then...
28, wow, that is quite...
It was when Leno went down.
Yeah.
And then I returned 70.
Yeah, we got to be the only Premier League podcast who has somebody to analyse the match who has not watched the majority of the
despite
match.
Despite being there as well.
Despite actually being at the match. Dan, like, obviously the first half display was a little bit disjointed. We spoke about we were very sloppy in possessioning, giving the ball away in some quite frankly unforgivable areas of the pitch, especially given the quality that Crystal Palace have. And I mean, it's just, I don't know, we just seem to struggle a bit of identity at the moment. Like, what if you had to put your finger on one thing that just wasn't clicking for Fulham in that first half, what would you say?
I genuinely think that this is the first, people have said it before, but I think this is the first time this season I've thought we look like we've just checked out. We're like, meh. We're on the beach, we've got enough points, and that was it. Because it felt like it's the same situation with Palace, right? They're in a situation now, there's nothing left to play for, but they came out with a real drive. They came at us, they pressed us really well. We never broke that press at any point. And I thought Will Hughes, I think Jack mentioned on the podcast, he's just like revolutionised himself as a player now. He suddenly, it was all over the pitch, he was snapping into tackles, and we just never managed to get a handle on that. I think that was the problem. And at that point, I think it needs some calm heads. But I think, you know, Diop misplaces a pass, then Bassi does, then Polina does, and suddenly everyone's caught it. And I think it sort of just caught on, basically. And everyone got nervous and sloppy. And I think Dom's right that we really needed that 2-minute break when Leno was down, because I think Marco was just fuming. I was watching him on the touchline and he was so angry, because I think he cares. Like, there's no way Marco Silva's got like an on the beach mentality as a manager, because he is genuinely, he would want to win if we were playing our under eights. So like I think he was fuming at that point.
That was at one point, he genuinely looked like he was about to give himself an aneurysm just on the side. It was like high stress. You mentioned Diop, he came in for Tosin. Interesting turn of events, because we've spoken quite a lot on the podcast about the partnership, and if Tosin's going to be out the door, then should we maybe test the Diop Bassi partnership? And Liz, that did happen today. And it is actually, before we came on, drew my attention to the fact that Tosin, despite having no injury, was put on hospitality duty today. There was an amazing photograph of him doing like a meet and greet as some sort of like corporate halftime show, looking very awkward and out of place. But I mean, I think it's pretty telling. Does this mean, in your opinion, that you think the Tosin's out the door this summer?
I mean, obviously he is. If anyone wants to see the photo, come find me in the bar afterwards.
It's really funny.
Showing it around.
He stood next to Les Strong, like towering over him, all 6'7". And Les is, he's a consummate professional. He must have done more Fulham corporate gigs than any person on this earth. But yeah, Tosin looked like he didn't really know what he was doing, didn't he?
Tosin looks about as unhappy as is possible to look with a microphone. He is so miserable.
And we've got Dom Betts on stage, ladies and gentlemen.
I thought it was a really good move from Marco to take him out. Like, obviously that news broke to us yesterday that he definitely wasn't going to be staying, and confirmed by lots of reputable people. And I think it just shows, like, nobody's really bigger than the club. We're on the beach now. There's no point playing a player that's definitely leaving. He did the same with Manu Solomon last year. We're not playing for anything. So it's a good move to drop him. And I thought the back line was really excellent today. Maybe not our wing backs, but
That leaves two.
Yeah, sorry. I thought Bassi was fabulous today, and I thought Diop had a really solid game as well.
Yeah, I think...
So definitely a good move.
Yeah, I think he shouldn't... But Tosin shouldn't be playing if he's going. Like, there's no need to play him. If he doesn't want to be here, then just let him rot on hospitality duties, as clearly that's what he's been put on.
I think it's so good for Marco, though, just to be like, because I think at that point Tosin's thinking day off, you know, might go trip around London, little day trip somewhere, and someone, club liaison officer, has come up to Marco and gone, right, we need a player to get an interview with Les Strong in front of some corporates, and he's gone, you can have this bloke who's decided he's checked out.
Yeah, he's thinking, finally I get to check out that famous Madame Tussauds that Muniz keeps banging on about. But no, you're on hospitality duty, Tosin. I mean, so it was obviously an incredibly disappointing first half. Dom, I mean, I don't know why I'm even bothered to ask you this, because you sure as hell didn't catch the goal. But I take it you've seen a replay.
I have seen it back, and that was the only way we were going to score a goal, by the ball just being whipped in and Muniz popping up and putting it in, because that first half, I think there was a cross in the first sort of 15 minutes or so, and then that was it. Because I was generally talking to people, I was like, generally, have we had a shot yet? And then, but that was the only way we were going to score. And then, when you look second half, we looked fairly comfortable. And then, obviously, it's a 1-0, which we'll get onto later. But it's just like, I just don't understand why we haven't been doing that more in recent games, because we know that's where Muniz is going to get his goals, and we just haven't been putting the ball into the right positions. I don't get it. When you've got a striker who's on good form like that, I know he scored that absolute finally a scissor kick against Sheffield United, but like, it's just, put more of those balls in the box and see what happens. And it's like, it's great. His goal scoring runs continues. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do next season, starting as our number nine. I think giving him that number nine shirt as well will be a big move if we can make it in the summer, just to give him that sort of run of confidence. But I said, it's the goal is like, what it makes me think, why are we not doing that more? Because we haven't been putting those balls in the box.
Yeah. I mean, Liz, I think of the very few standout performances, especially in that first half, but Muniz did make a real nuisance of himself, as he has done time and time again for us. He's got that ability to just, a cross will come zinging in and he'll just go boop, and it will pop up and it will get his body in between two defenders. And he got on the end of that ball from Paulinho in the first half. He had no right to get anywhere near that ball and ended up throwing at the keeper from point blank range and forcing a corner. But it's becoming more and more evident that he is going to be our nine next season. Do you agree?
Definitely. I think in the last 6 months, he's really learned how to become a physical striker, and he's learned how to use his body properly. And I don't see how we could even think about replacing him, honestly, at this point. Obviously, I want to bring backup in, but he's got like close to a goal a game since he's been starting for us. I don't see how he doesn't get the number nine shirt next season. And it's such a nice story because, you know, as we were saying, we all really liked him, but he wasn't very good at football. And now we really like him. And he is taking the world by storm.
And also, if he gets a number nine shirt, we can now start calling him
R9.
Yeah. You want that 2002 Brazil shirt, Muniz nine. Let's get an empty one and have Muniz nine on the back of one of those yellow Brazil 2002 shirts.
Absolutely. It's nice that we'll have an R9 and a Raul 7 in the same team. Yeah.
Also, my favourite part of the game, and one of the things I love about him, is he loves playing football and he's really warmed to like the Fulham crowd. I think he gives a lot of credit to us. And there was a moment after he'd scored, and I think he had another chance which just went wide, and we were singing his chant, his new chant, at him, and he was just taking steps back towards the Putney and just grinning. Like, he just looked so happy to have like arrived as a footballer in the Premier League. He's got fans that love him. He's playing well. And I think it's just such a lovely story, as Liz says. It's just so nice to have someone who loves playing football for us.
Yeah, I say, long may it continue. And I wanted to talk, thrown a tiny little bit of about sometimes how Marco Silva doesn't quite get the substitutions right.
Fucking hell.
However, I don't know, today I thought it kind of, I know ultimately we were 1-0 up and then ended up drawing the game 1-1, but I thought that the Paulinho, his arm was kind of forced because he's one yellow away from a three-match suspension. So obviously Sasha Lukic coming on. And then Breuer, I just wanted to talk, I've seen the Putney end, so I didn't hear this, but Did Breuer get booed?
Yeah,
when
it happens every week.
There was a few.
It happens every week. He gets, and whenever he gets brought on the back of the Hammersmith end, there's a smattering of boos, which baffles me. Yeah. Because it's like, yes, he plays for Chelsea, but also he's currently playing for Fulham. Like, and also he's not a bad footballer. Like, every time Breuer comes on, he actually does a good bit of work.
No, but so I think my main issue was when he came on. I was like, is there any chance you're just being in the middle of the pitch? Because I felt like every time I saw him, he was like drifting out wide left. I was like, that's great, but you're the striker. So we've got wingers do that job.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you're coming on loan from Chelsea and you've not scored yet and you've been here since January, that I think that you're always going to be on the hard into nothing. And I think that...
Yeah, he has played about 15 minutes.
I know. He basically, I think... The way I look at the Breuer transfer is like, we had to sign someone on deadline day, because if we didn't sign a striker, everyone would have lost their heads. Because obviously Jimenez had that injury and he'd just been on that goal scoring run. And then obviously he gets signs on deadline day and then Muniz scores away at Burnley. And then he just goes on this ridiculous run. So I feel like he has been kind of this transfer has just basically worked as the worst way possible for him. But even in the first couple of games, when I think he made a couple of substitute appearances, he didn't look fit. So I don't think he's come into the team being like raring to go and ready to make a difference. And I think, but yeah, I think there was definitely boos. I just looked at him. I was like, just stop drifting out wide left. We're playing 4-2-3-1, mate. Like, your job is to be the number nine, be in the box, hold the ball up, and put the ball in the back of the net. And as much as
it sounds really easy, Dom.
Yeah,
and it's as simple as that. Yeah.
I mean, obviously we're playing 4-4-2. I mean, it would have been a lot easier, but it would. No, it's just I don't feel. I understand. He's probably joined the club as like, well, I've not joined here to be on the bench, and that's what I feel like. He's not completely bought in, and I don't think the really because of Namuni's form. It's really, I think the transfer has been, basically we paid Chelsea £4 million for no reason, basically is what I look at the transfer.
I think it's always nice to hear from Dan, the number one Royer defender. And I say number one because I mean only.
It's not just because I'm Albanian, it's not.
Are you sure about that?
I like to buy into the conspiracy. I'm getting my tinfoil hat on that Tony Khan brought him in purposefully not to play him to drive his transfer value down and then pick him up for cheap in January. But we'll see anyway.
Can we just go back to the substitution?
Are you sure he's even thinking about us at the moment?
Oh, he's got it. But yeah, for those of you who didn't see, did anyone see his wrestling exploits this week? I mean, thank God he's all right. We were worried about Bert Leno. I mean, TK's lucky to be alive.
After what Shay did to him, mate. Oh, bit rough.
Yeah, yeah. So for those who didn't see, he got I don't know even what you call it. Choke slam. It's been a long time since I watched wrestling. Through its
pile driver. Driver.
Sorry, Dan, you had something to say about the substitutions.
Oh, yeah. Back to the game. I just don't know why Marco Silva thought a midfield pairing of Kearney and Lukic would help us see out a 1-0 win. Like, that's like the loosest, lovely, most languid and creative double pivot you could have, which is great if you're trying to score a goal. But we were trying to hold out, and it just didn't make any sense. And also, we have the quickest player in the Premier League sat on the bench, and as a team pushes up against us, why would you not play him? Like, it's so simple just to lob Adama Traore on and say, just stand on the halfway line. If we win the ball, run. And like, we have scored 3 goals by doing that this season, and Marco sometimes thinks, nah.
And that substitution is the main reason why Arsenal aren't going to win the league this year. So...
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice to have seen Adama, actually, because that final 20 minutes was all gas, no
brakes. There was space. There was plenty of space to get in and behind, and it was like, no, we'll just have a lovely little creative midfield pivot. I was like, no, just bring on someone with raw pace to absolutely, because all game, you know, the way Palace have sort of this, because of the way their managers have been. If you think of, you know, Warnock, you think of Pulis, you think of Hodgson, who keeps on playing in a certain way, and then you bring in someone like Glasner who plays a completely different way, and it doesn't really feel right being Palace. They've been playing like this free-flowing, high-pressing
like
football.
Prime Borussia Dortmund. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, right, okay. And I said, I'm with Dan. It was like the substitutions, I often feel Silva is too late with them a lot of the time. But today I was like, it's not even they were too late, or they just didn't make sense. To me, I was like, as Dan said, like bringing not even just bringing on trouble, but bringing on someone who's going to drive at that Palace defence. Because even in that additional 7 minutes, like there was plenty of time, and there's plenty of times we were getting down the line and breaking them, and we just didn't create the chances in the box. So I think, yeah, bringing on Traore or not bringing on Traore just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, Traore really would have been nice, I do admit, but. It was a sustained spell of pressure from Palace. To be honest, the whole game was just a one long sustained spell of pressure from Palace, wasn't it? But they were eventually rewarded after being relatively wasteful in goal by Sharp. I mean, Liz, best goal we've seen at the Cottage this year? It couldn't have been any more top corner and came relatively out of nowhere. I'm going to say I think that's the best goal we've seen at the Cottage this year.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree because I mean recency, but I thought the free kick from Trent.
No, we're not having Liverpool. Yeah, Liverpool goal being the best goal soon.
But I mean, it's a great goal. There's nothing you can do about that. I feel like I'm just rolling out cliches about it, but because I knew it was going to end as a draw, when it did, I was like, oh, well, there we are. And I took I took my dad, who hasn't made it to that many games this season, but I took him today, and he is a 100% record this season. He's seen one game. And I, when the goal went in, I went, oh, it's a bit disappointing, isn't it? And he went, yeah. And he, I was like, you know, saw it coming, yeah. And then, been a quite nice day though, hasn't it? Yeah. So like, as much as it is disappointing to concede in the, what, like 80-somethingth minute, I don't think it's that deep.
Can we just stop conceding goals, man, outside the box? Is there like a way to prevent this?
But this was like a proper like prime Barclays like, thunder bastard, ball drops across and someone just swings a leg at it. Like none of this Pep Guardiola knock it about stuff. This is just like Jeffrey Shupp going, oh, fuck it, and just like driving through it. I love it.
Yeah, because like when me and Dan sit, we pretty much have the same view in regard to looking straight at the goal. And as soon as he hits it, I was like, shit. You just see it absolutely swazzing into the top corner. And I was like, sake. But I said it, as long as it means that a Liverpool player doesn't win the best goal we've seen in the Cottage this year, then it...
I don't think that's an actual award.
as long as it's not Trent winning it, then, you know, I said it smelt a 1-1 going to the game, but I said it, that hit was, I don't think he could have swazzed it more into the top bins than he did.
I mean, dare I say it, given the form that Palace have been on recently, the free-flowing...
Please don't say it was a good result.
If you'd have offered me a draw at the start of the game, I probably would have taken it. I don't know. What do you think, Dad?
No, because I was at the point I was like, right, please either be a 3-0 either way or a 3-3. I just, a 1-1 just... Oh. The game doesn't mean anything. The game doesn't mean anything to either team, apart from 1.2 million, which doesn't affect us. So, like, I'd rather both teams just go for it and it ends up like 4-3 to Palace than...
Yeah, Liz, if we're trying to take any positives from today, any standout performances, anyone you want to give an honourable mention to?
Well, obviously Muniz for the goal and Diop and Bassi. I thought they were really good and made me feel a lot more calm about next season, which is always good. Not much else. I thought Lukic was pretty decent when he came on,
off
which
the
did
bench
surprise
as well,
me.
Ladies and gents. Never thought we'd see the day.
But yeah, I had a great time.
In fairness to Muniz, like he did bully Joachim Andersen for a bit, and as like a proper old school Premier League centre back of like big wins headers, to go like toe to toe with him and fight and win that many free kicks that, I mean, Anderson should have been booked like 30 minutes before he actually was. And I think that probably does change things as well. But I think that's a really commendable performance, especially when you consider he's playing up top on his own against three centre-backs. I think to lead the line like that is...
I don't think Nathaniel Clarke counts as a centre-back. Like, but also, I was about to say half-time, but it wasn't half-time, it was about 30 minutes in. But I heard someone moaning about... Oh, Anderson. He was moaning about Bobby Reid and Anderson. I was like, mate, Anderson left us 2 years ago. And he was on loan. So there's no... He was like,
and none of us would have seen him play in a Fulham shirt.
Yeah. I was like...
And we got this attachment to Anderson. The one that got away, where he's like, it was a loan player. Like, we gave him the captain's armband, for God's sake.
I thought it was a throwaway comment, but he kept going on about it. I was like, geezer. He ain't played for us for two, maybe 3 years now. Just wind it.
I'm a big Anderson fan. Apparently he was like super keen to stay as well if we stayed up.
That's the key factor there.
Which famously we didn't, obviously. Scott Parker's brand of football didn't, you know, lead to Premier League safety. But yeah, I mean, I clapped him a bit today, but there was quite a lot of booing from... I was in the Putney end from the Johnny Haynes, so I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I didn't understand that at
all.
Yeah,
I'll give him abuse for no reason whatsoever, but just like...
From
just,
the concourse.
Just for the fact that, you know, if you haven't even said it at the club, you're dead to me, so...
Right, before we wrap up this part, Dan, I just want to ask, so we've got a handful of games left now. I believe it's three games left, so we've obviously got Brentford away, Luton Town away, and we welcome Manchester City. We want to win at Brentford, right? But like, what are you hoping for the rest of the season, and what do you expect as well? Because we're a bit of a headless chicken of a club at the minute. It feels like we don't really have much direction.
But there was that Twitter thread that we're like the most mid-table of mid-table teams ever. Like, as long as Arsenal don't win the league, we can just say we stopped Arsenal winning the league.
I also think we are less likely to win at Luton than we are to beat City. Like, if Luton need 3 points on the final day of the season, there is no way we turn up and do anything. Like, this like going to be like that Sheffield United game when we came up. If anyone was at Bramall Lane that day, we lost 4-0.
I would love nothing more than if Luton need a win that day, and Atwell was a referee again. Because then you're gonna have Forrest just whining on, as usual, despite the fact they were just, put it like, shit last week. So, like, I would love enough. Like, Atwell today, I was making so many jokes. Just like, oh, that's, all right, we didn't give a decision. Oh, yeah, Luton wanted that.
I also feel like we would all rather Luton stay up than Forest, right? Yeah. So fuck it. Just give them the 3 points. No. Like, as long as we beat Brentford, I actually don't mind if we roll over in the last two games of the season, because ultimately doesn't matter. And I don't know any City fans. I know lots of Arsenal and Liverpool fans, so don't mind if they win the league. Also would like Luton
to
stay up.
It's not about City winning the league. It's about saying, well, we took 4 points off you, so we stopped you winning the league.
Yeah. Anyway, to round off the most mid-table of mid-table fixtures today in the Premier League, it was a great quote that Sammy actually shared on his Twitter. I'll read it out because I think it summarises our season quite beautifully. Fulham have been sensational value this season. The thinking mid-tables club, mid-table club. They've gone about it entirely the right way. Bothering the big boys enough to take points off Arsenal and slap Spurs absolutely silly, while showing the whole entire arse against your Sheffield Uniteds and Burnleys. And I wouldn't have it any other way, to be honest. Yeah, thank you very much. Have a quick break. Get a beer. Nick Bowles will be back for part two with Paddy Barkley, Peter Utsler, Sammy James. Thank you very much. Cheers.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy here, still at the Half Moon Putney. I'm joined by Farrell Monk. The Athletic's Peter Rutsler. And the legendary football journalist, Paddy Barkley. Gents, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah?
Only speaking for myself.
I'm all right. I've survived the game, so...
Yeah? All right. Let's do some questions in a moment. But, Paddy, just first of all, it's amazing to hear that after your legendary career of going to World Cups, Champions League finals, that little old Fulham is what took your heart. So, if you wouldn't mind, just divulging exactly... Yeah. What drew you to little old Fulham?
Well, I have to be honest that if you cut my heart open, which you probably will at the end of the show, the club in my heart is Dundee Football Club, which is my hometown club. But and if Dundee were playing Fulham in the Champions League final, and I'd actually like a round of applause for the sheer boldness of that vision. I would be supporting Dundee, but no, to answer the question properly, I did, as you said, for 40 years, I covered football, and I always wanted to be a football fan again, because you can't be a football fan, really, when you're doing it in a sort of clinical way, when you're trying to analyse it and not be biased, while fending off allegations of bias from everybody. Fulham's my local club, and it was just a sheer stroke of luck that it was also the English club that I loved most. Having met the people, Carmela Mifsud, the head of communications, who's Sarah Brooks, you know, and just basically there was also a journalist who I knew and respected very well, who died far too young at the age of 40, called Danny Fulbrook, who was Fulham through and through. There was another journalist called Dave Kidd as well, who still, you know, I still occasionally see him at halftime in the... I sit in the Haynes C upper, And
round of applause to Sea Upper.
Boo from a D-lower fan.
I just want to say this for your safety, the others. They're here in force. All I would say is that they're not bad lads, but don't make eye contact. Okay?
And Paddy, what have you made of Fulham season so far?
Well, you know, if you're only as good as your last match, so obviously underwhelmed. But it was poor today, and I think we were very lucky, flattered by a point. But over the season as a whole, I think it's been fantastic. I love watching Marco Silva's Fulham. I love watching Fulham anyway, but... And, I mean, the highlights, I think, would be the 2-5-0s, which I thought were majestic, and the sheer love of the ball that we showed on those occasions was just fantastic. And... I suppose beating Arsenal and Tottenham in the same season, and what's more, beating Tottenham in a way that, if they were proper footballers, they would never forget, you know?
And beating United as well.
Yes, I mean, although that no longer, but doesn't mean as... You know, it's not the Fulhamish way to be arrogant, but we expect to beat them. I think it's been a great season, and although today's performance was the kind of performance that erodes one's love for a football team, you did have. I think in the first half of the programme there were so many references to being on the beach, I thought it was advert for TUI, but it was that sort of performance, and we don't expect that, but I think we can forgive it after all the wonderful things we've seen this season.
Peter, your thoughts on today's game? Not Fulham's best performance of the season by a long chalk, and pretty fortunate, I thought, to come away with a point on reflection.
Yeah, I think the guys summed up really nicely in part one. It was underwhelming, as Paddy said. I was kind of hoping it would be multi-scoring, you know, like Dom said, maybe a 3-3 rather than a 1-1. It does feel a bit of a letdown for it to end up like that. But first half, Puffett Palace were really impressive, the way they pressed and their setup. Complete night and day compared to what they were earlier in the season. I mean, to go from that to, from a Roy Hodgson setup to what they were today, I think it was to do that in that short amount of time is quite impressive. At first half, Fulham didn't show up. They weren't sharp enough, weren't quick enough, weren't good enough on the ball. And the tactical break, Marco Silva learning from Eddie Howe's Martin Dubravka incident the other week. That did give, just interrupted the momentum a bit, and then second half was better, wasn't it? And the goal was lovely.
The goal was lovely, but I felt in the first section of our show that they talked about it as if it was Muniz's goal. To me, it was the cross made it. I don't think there are too many people in this room who would not have scored that after the cross. I mean, the delay.
You have not seen me play football.
when you said that, Sammy looked directly in my eyes, because we play football with each other a lot.
I know, I wouldn't have scored it. I've missed easier ones than that. But it was just such a sensational cross, and we were, you know, in our area of the ground, we're just in a position to see how he delayed and dinked that cross. And he Tim Castagna, I'm talking about, celebrated that goal as if he'd scored it. And in my opinion, he'd 60% scored it.
He's had a good couple of weeks, Tim Castagna. And
yeah. He was great today, actually.
It was okay.
They did such a good job on us, Palace, that it was only after about 70 minutes that I realised that Anthony was actually on the field, you know, because he... Normally he's our outside left, he's our left back, he's
are everything. He is... and today, the first time he went forward, I think it was 65, 70 minutes, something like that. And you've got to give Palace credit for that.
They're really good.
Yeah. Farrell, your thoughts on the game before we get on to some questions?
Is
that Jeffrey Schlumpke one of the goals the best goals that we've seen this season?
I think it's one of the best goals I've seen at Craven Cottage, unfortunately. It's so well hit, and you can definitely tell that there was, you know, it's one of those, it was like a big Gary Neville style ooh as it sort of like thundered off his foot. But yeah, I just echo what these guys were saying as well. You know, Palace set up so well. They really nullified our threats, especially from out wide as well. You know, Munoz especially on the right hand side was nullifying Anthony Robinson quite well. Sometimes when Jordan Ayew was going out there, it was really good. A special mention to Wharton as well, after he only made his Premier League debut a few months ago. They really did a job on us. It was really annoying.
And Peter, it would inevitably come as a question, so we might as well address the elephant in the room. Did Marco have any comments about tossing after the match?
We asked him, you know, is he going to play for Fulham again? After obviously, you know, he's going to leave at the end of the season once his contract expires. And Marco Silva said, yeah, no, he'll play. You know, if I decide he should be on the pitch, then, you know, there's three games remaining. Then the follow-up question is, are you going to look at others to play in that position? You know, the ones on longer-term contracts. He said, I'm looking for the present. Don't want to win games. But I also need to look at the future of this football club. So...
He doesn't always give you loads, does he?
No.
Let's do some questions from the audience. George, can we get a mic check?
Hello, yeah, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Here we go. We're excellent. In the 21st century.
Right. Hello, sir. What's your name? What's your question?
Hi, I'm Sefton. My question is, considering Mitrovic's best non-penalty season was 10 goals and Muniz is one goal away from that, who do you think is better?
Anyone want to step forward for that?
Well, I'll take that one to save the other boys. But, I mean, obviously, you judge on the moment. I would rather have Muniz now, obviously, than this slug that...
I think we've had enough.
That Mitro had become, you know. So lazy that all he was worried about was trying to win fouls, and which Muniz is actually much better at, because he does actually win proper fouls rather than complain about fouls that aren't fouls, which Mitro in his final period did. But I think it would be ridiculous to downplay the effect that Mitro had on Fulham Football Club for most of his time here, when, what was he called, the Italian manager, Ranieri. When Ranieri said, what you people don't realise is that this is one of the best centre-forwards in Europe. I was quite right. But unfortunately, you know, he became lazy and now we've got a much, much better, infinitely better player. I mean, there have been times in the last few games where there have been balls thrown up front which Mitro wouldn't have even tried for. And Muniz goes for everything, and bravely, bravely.
Brilliant.
So, you know, the nine is dead, long live the nine, you know.
Yeah, all right, next question.
Well, I'm getting a bit emotional after that one. So, long live Muniz. Yes, sir, what's your name? What's your question?
Joe. Long time listener.
First time email, hello.
First team, yeah, whatever. So I've got a question. What is your Fulham hot take or unpopular opinion? Mine is, this might like rattle some fans in this room, that Tosin is the best centre-back that we've had since Breda Hangland. That is my... I have a weird obsession with him. No. No, that's my opinion, but...
All right. I'm not convinced that Tosin's the best centre-back in our centre-back partnership, but... Farrell, you're a man for unpopular hot takes. Oh, yeah, so let's cross straight over to you.
My hot take is that that guy only wanted to say a hot take rather than actually answer that question of us. I can't think of a hot take right now, actually. I think probably the hot take that if we asked that was probably the Mitro Muniz discussion as well. And I can't really think of anything now, but let's pass down the panel and I'll have a mm-hmm. bit longer to have.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. The Tosin thing's interesting. I think we might have a little bit of recency bias about his situation and how that affects how we see him. Because as a defender and the way that Marco Silva wants to play and how important he has been and the reason he has been playing so regularly this season is because of how good he is on the ball. Mm. And I think what he does on the ball is quite rare. I don't know if he's the best since Breda Hangeland. I don't know, but he's certainly going to be up there in my opinion. I don't think that's as wild a take as you think. I think his last couple of games, but if you just remember when he came back into the team around about the Everton semi-final time,
yeah,
unbelievable. That was the best he's played for Fulham. I think he changed the team in the direction of the.
Yeah, I think it's quite easy to be quite revisionist, isn't it?
Because he's going, right?
Because he's going and recent performances. I wish him well in lots of ways, but I haven't got anything that's like quite as hot as and spicy as that.
If I had lots of hot takes, I probably wouldn't be on this panel right now, to be honest.
I just think that the performance today by Calvin Bassey was probably our only really good player today. Confirms what I sense would be a general opinion that he's the best defender at the club. However, why Calvin and Tosin were such a good partnership, however brief, was that you needed one centre-back, you need right-left foot. In an ideal world, you also need one who can play. And that's what Tosin provided, and that's why Diop and Calvin Bassey is not going to work. Diop's got to go. And it's a bit sad. Cause
that's a hot take. Well, I'm not a centre-backs now.
He's quite... when you have a player that the opposition want to be on the ball, you've got a problem in the modern game. So I think we have got to find a footballer to complement Calvin Bassey next season.
Yeah. All right, next question.
My question, this gentleman here, sir, in the flat cap. Hello, who's the best player of the season?
Oh, this will divide opinion. Peter?
Really good question. Sure, Muniz is making a good late claim, isn't he? I think it's probably Anthony Robinson.
Yes, yeah, that was who I was going to say.
I think what I've liked about Robinson is just how much he's improved. Obviously, we've seen him since he's come in, and you know he's quite clearly a fantastic athlete. He can cover so much ground, and it's a real joy to watch him run up that left-hand side. But the partnership he has with Willian, the way he's sort of refining his end product a lot more, because that's the criticism that's always been, you know, what can you do when you get to the penalty area? And it felt like he was trying to do these floated crosses that, you know, when Mitrovic was there, and it just doesn't suit him. We've seen him do a lot more cutbacks, a lot more lower crosses, just things that suit him better. And I think he's becoming a bit more intelligent. And I think his defence, the defensive side of his game has been fantastic. There's been some really outstanding performances. I think it was the 4-3 when he went up against Mo Salah, and when Mo Salah was in pretty decent form and just
turned him the other way.
Completely locked him down.
Spurs at home, he was amazing that day as well.
Yeah.
So anyone else other than Anthony? Anthony's my choice because I think it's got to be for a whole season. Farrell, you're smiling like you've got.
Well, no, I was smiling because, has anyone got any other choice? You went Farrell. I was like, oh no, it is probably Jedi as well, to be honest. but I mean, this is probably the most competitive player of the season vote that we'll probably have in recent memory.
I mean, the goalie would have come into
Until... You think about like Leno, you think about Paulinho probably, Iwobi, Willian's had another good season. Yeah. Muniz has definitely played himself into contention.
Timmy Castagna.
Yeah, Castagna. There are some, ooh, not Andreas. Pereira, definitely not Pereira. there's my hot take. Bassi's been really good since he came like fully into the team as well. There are some. It's great that we are having this conversation at all. That you know, it's not just one particular standout player, that there are multiple different players that you can go for. The only thing I will say is that there's a chance that Anthony Robinson might not win because he still has lots. There are groups of fans who don't really see the value in him, which I find mad.
Wow. Can I make can I make a confession, which my pals, my neighbours in Haynes Upper Sea, this shortlist, by the way, which you've just outlined so accurately, contains quite a lot of players that have slagged off rotten. Bassey, oh my God. I mean, I could, Muniz, and I think I'm probably not alone here.
Burnley at home, I was joining everyone.
So, yeah, I think we've all got a few things wrong. But I think the development of a lot of the players now, from what we thought was duffers to shortlist candidates, has got to go down to the management and coaching staff.
Yeah. Is this going to be the first time ever that we give the Player of the Season trophy to Marco Silva?
Well, yeah, if he could win it. There's a couple of questions over here, George.
Hi, it's Rich from Dallas. Good to see you guys again.
Howdy.
So, my question is this. You mentioned, you talk about Tosin, and Tosin maybe not. Who else might we be seeing for the last time at the coming match, the last home match of the season, both in terms of other clubs pursuing them, but also potentially people that are saying, okay, we're at the end of our Fulham career?
Bo Morte?
Well, yeah. Peter, like any players that it feels like, I mean,
as in the season,
as in yeah, the end of the as season. In like in these last few matches, who do we anticipate might not be here next year?
Well, we still don't know about Bobby Decker Dover Reed. We know that they were talking about a new contract. His contract's up. Kenny Tete is the other one. Obviously, we talked about him on previous podcasts, but there's an offer on the table. There is an option to extend, but when you get to this point, when you're this close to May and clubs are finalising their retained and release lists, you generally, it's not really a good sign if you haven't agreed. Willian will be the interesting one. I think Willian was probably the most, he's played the most games, most minutes, and been the most influential this season. Of those that we're not sure about, and I think how you replace him and the way Fulham go about that is probably one of the biggest transfer decisions.
And Paddy, on the other side, obviously there's players that might leave because they're out of contract, but there will be some big fish circling around a few of our players, and one of the players that I really am dreading going is the player that we were just talking about, Anthony Robinson, because there is a dearth of left backs in the Premier League.
I absolutely agree, and left backs are so fashionable. Sorry, full backs are so fashionable now, quite rightly, because they're such
I'm finally fashionable.
I think we're talking about a grade up. Although, to be quite honest, if you can't defend better than Trent Alexander-Arnold, I'd be very surprised.
I'll see you there Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Kennington Park.
It's a date. The fullbacks are so important in the modern game, and he's so important to us in terms of getting us from that third to that third, Anthony, that I'm surprised there's been so little speculation. If I was the manager or the recruitment person of a top four club, I would absolutely have targeted Jedi. I still feel a bit uncomfortable. I'm not his mate. I just like him. You know, I just like watching him. That's all. If I was the recruitment officer for a top four club, he would be very, very high on my list. So I think you're right to be scared about that. The fear of Paulinho going, which would have been, if we'd have been discussing this 6 weeks ago, I think Paulinho would have been top of our list of people that we were scared of leaving. It appears he's not going to go. And on today's performance, I think he'd be lucky to get a club. but no, of course, he's a fantastic. He's a legend at our club. He contributes, you know, all over the season. He's contributed as much as just about anybody. But yeah, Robinson would be a huge fear. And if he keeps playing like this, Muniz, people will come for him. Mm-hmm. They will.
He gets 10 Premier League goals in that amount of time.
In that amount of time. And the transformation from the young player that we weren't convinced about, to put it mildly, to this frightening... I mean, Anderson's a good defender, and he won't get a harder game. Mm. You know, he won't have had a harder game all season, I can guarantee you, than that. He should have been booked. The refereeing was a... I mean, the referee was...
Go on! Was just in every decision.
He should have been actually booked. Quite apart from his fouls, he should have been booked for a particularly undignified bit of dissent in the first half, which would have meant that he wouldn't have been able to commit those fouls in the second half. And that's, to go off at a tangent, that's what's wrong with refereeing now. They hand out yellow cards when they don't fucking matter. In the nine minutes from the end, who cares? And they should hand them out earlier when they can actually affect the game and increase the chance of fairness. Having said that, it would have been terribly unfair if we'd won that game. And,
let's go for a couple more questions before we finish. Well, I've lost George. Oh, he's there.
Yeah, we got one right here.
Hi, guys. My name's Callum.
Hi, Callum.
Long-time listener. First time Fulhamish live at the Half Moon Putney. Question asker.
Very good.
Start off with a slight disclaimer. I love Marco Silva. I think he's one of our best managers. But I've got a consistent decision that he makes week in, week out that I disagree with, and that is the lack of minutes for Tom Kearney. I think we are fundamentally a better football team with him on the pitch, whether it's from the start or on the bench. And I'd like to know if you guys agree.
Yeah, I mean, Farrell, it's kind of ever since Polina got suspended for those couple of games, and then I think Lukic and Reed came in, and Kenny's never really actually won his place back. It's kind of strange, because you understood it maybe for those two games without Polina, but yeah, well, he's barely got a sniff, really.
Yeah, and I don't know, I mean, I love Tom Kearney. I think he's a fantastic footballer, like a lot of other people. And yes, whatever that was. And I feel like sometimes when I'm watching the game today, I was thinking this wasn't necessarily the game for Tom Kearney. Mm. But also, he seems to have changed his game slightly from last season, where last season he was brought on specifically just to shore up the game, hold on to the ball and drag the team up the pitch, which he did amazingly. But this season, he's not doing it as much. He really struggled to get into the game when he came on. And he always has said it's quite difficult to come on and actually influence the game coming off the bench. I don't necessarily feel like when we're bringing him on, he's actually affecting the game positively as he has done in previous years. But also, I don't feel like the shape is really suited to his style at the moment. Mainly because of the influence of Andreas Pereira in front of him and the way that sort of he plays really far forward a lot of the time, which means either Kearney can't play forward, he has to play a bit more further back, which doesn't necessarily suit his style as much. And I don't necessarily know what the answer is.
I think, was it Dan, I think in the first part was saying Lukic and Kearney together shouldn't happen. It was funny when you said that because it was something I'd asked Silva earlier in the season. He basically said, as just said, can you play them together because their profiles are similar? And he's like, well, no. So when you saw it today, it was even you said you don't normally do that. So, but I think you're right, Farrell, in that, you know, because Kearney's getting older now and the role that Silva likes Pereira to do, which would have been what Kearney would have liked to play in the 10, looking in the pockets a bit more. Mm. He doesn't feel that Kearney can do that running that Pereira does. Mm. So that limits him in terms of where he gets in. So you've got Polina and then the other role. And it seems like since Lukic has come in and he had that partnership with Reed, that you didn't want to disrupt that, but it also means he's competing with more people for less of a slot. And I think when we've seen Kearney at his best this season, it's definitely been with Willian. And Willian's minutes have also been managed. So I think that's why we probably don't see him as much. I mean, when Kearney and Willian are together and they're playing and you've got Robinson going around them, it's really fantastic to watch, isn't it?
So it is.
That's Fulham at their optimum this season. Right, time for one more question and then we'll wrap it up there. Someone on the front here, George?
Yeah, I got coming.
And they sat front and centre. That's brave.
Yeah. for all the heckling.
Yeah, not much heckling going on, but it's good. Which area do we need to invest in for next season to be pushing into Europa League places?
Oh, yes.
The Johnny Haynes toilets.
Hammersmith toilets as well.
To finish this off, it would be great to get an answer from all three of you on this one. So one area that Fulham should invest in order to make sure that we are qualifying for the Europa Conference League in 25-26. Dom needs his trip to Vilnius.
I've already said we need a footballing centre-back because we've lost not only Tosin, but, we've lost Tim Ream, who's one of the best footballing centre-backs. Sorry for mispronouncing Tim Ream's name. but yes, I sometimes wonder, I see myself doing that Ream in the stand and I think, fucking hell, mate, you're 76. Live by the river as well, you know, all of these things that I should have grown out of. But anyway, sorry, we need someone who, like Tim or Tosin, can bring the ball out of defence. We really need that because you know we've got nobody else that can do that, and so that would be the first thing. I also think I've watched Pereira all season and I like him. I think he's been a good contributor to our club. But I do think we need a stronger presence off the front. And I think that was actually blindingly obvious today. Mm. Eventually, Muniz is going to get sick of winning these balls at the risk to his health if there's nobody running onto them. And so I think we need someone who can help the striker as... Andreas did up till this season.
Peter?
I was just thinking of the hot take, but it's not really a hot take to say I'd like to see at some point Harry Wilson play in the middle at some point because you know he drifts out of games and feel like you could do it, but we'll never see it. I said it earlier, I think a winger, probably a match-winning winger. I think that's what this team is lacking. Yeah.
Do you not think Harry could do that? It has done that.
Well, he has done that, but he never plays consistently. I was like, just play 10 games straight. Just see if that plays him into the level that he's shown in some glimpses. But it's certainly on the left-hand side anyway, with Willian and whatever else.
Farrell?
I was going to say winger too, but for a different reason, because I think it would allow Iwobi to play more centrally, which I think is his best position. Centrally and more deeper, and so he can influence the play more, just all over the pitch, really, because I think he's a bit wasted out wide. Not that he's not playing... badly, I just think we could just utilise him better, and that's just because we're seeing him out wide at the moment because basically William was injured a little bit and we've had to play Bobby and therefore he's gone out wide. I think some of his best football is when he's played more in the sort of eight role this season.
All right, well, thank you very much for all your brilliant questions, and thank you very much to everyone listening today. Thank you to this wonderful audience here at the Half Moon Putney. Thank you to Phil from the Half Moon for all the arrangements. Thank you to George for organising the evening. Thank you to all the guests from part one, to George, to Liz, to Dan, to Dom. And please give a round to my brilliant guests from part two, Farrell Monk, Peter Rutzler and Paddy Barclay. Fulhamish will be back on Thursday. We'll have a live rendition of This Will Catch On and also more analysis from today's game. But until then, have a great start to your week. Come on, you Whites!